Welcome back to the Anaheim Calling Podcast. It is a Thursday night edition. The Ducks taking on the Winnipeg Jets. Last game before the All-Star weekend here. The Ducks taking this one in a very, very exciting fashion, 4-3 in the shootout. A game that had a lot of twists and turns, some injuries, highlight reel goals, just a bit of everything in this one. Jake returns from a brief absence. Jake, who was actually at the game tonight. Jake, you want to tell us how you managed to get tickets tonight?
Well, first off, I just got to say, woo!
Yes, I actually didn't even talk about that on the last podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had a very high esteemed guest who
this is true, who
probably wouldn't get into that type of tangent that you and I usually go
into. We're getting back to our roots here.
Yes. No, but I got to give a shout out to a really kind of good listener of our podcast and kind of person that I think both you and I have interacted with a bunch and have really good talks with, at Kestrel Scott. He invited me to come out to the game with him, and it was a really, really good time. So I just got to give him a huge shout out and a huge thank you. And he definitely still wants to give you a 6-pack of Molson to kind of bring you back to your roots.
I mean, that is music to my ears because, first off, I love beer. Secondly, I'm Canadian, as people who might not know.
Wait, you're Canadian?
Yeah, I mean,
do you like the Canadians also?
You know what? Funny you should ask. I'm a Canadiens fan, funny you should ask because they lost tonight. So I'm now hit the point in the Canadian season where I'm happy when they lose.
That's
how bad it's got.
Are you on the train to fall for Dahlin?
Fallen for Dahlin. I want to fall all the way down. Anyway, how did this become a Canadian spot? All right. But yes, big shout out to Kestrel Scott. Really nice gesture, and I look forward to the beer. And also, you kind of briefly touched on it, but big thank you to Mike Coppinger. LA Times came on Tuesday. Really nice of him. I kind of asked him a little late, last minute. So big shout out. But let's get into tonight's game because it was really a doozy for.
It was a fun one.
I mean, you didn't even have to be a fan of either team. You're just a fan of hockey. I mean, it really had everything. So it was Patrick Eves' beard night at the Honda Center tonight. Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Yeah, Patrick Eves dropping the puck, ceremonial puck drop at the beginning of that game. I didn't know this at the time, but it was for his charity tonight, right? There was some charity implications?
Yes, I believe that there was some sort of charity that went along with it for, I think, probably some sort of package deal. But yes, they had a couple different videos that they showed about that. So it was really good on that front.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see. And I think it's cool of the Ducks to kind of keep Patrick Eves in the loop here as his status remains uncertain this season. So it's cool to see them kind of still giving him a bit of a spotlight and doing it for a good cause. So, I mean, we're all just hoping to see Patrick Eves back in the lineup at some point. You know, it's rough seeing him out there not playing. So let's get right into the action though. First period, right off the hop, I thought Corey Perry came out looking a lot more determined than he has in previous games. Cut to the middle in the first few minutes, you know, and it was a patented Corey Perry move, just coming down the wing, cutting to his forehand and just getting it on net. When I say Corey Perry hasn't looked as good in recent games, that's what I'm talking about. It's just those moments, those moves that we haven't been seeing him. And it was good to see him come out and remain aggressive throughout most of this game.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of not trying to go too far ahead, but he had a good game. He had 3 shots on goal at even strength, 6 shots on goal in general. The big issue that kind of I think you and I have talked about with Perry is this season it kind of seems like his shot attempt numbers and his individual shot generation have gone down a bit, and that's been kind of the big concerning thing. And it seems like it's almost as if him getting put on that line with Vermette and Wagner has forced him to be the kind of the trigger man, whereas it's almost like when he's with Raquel, he's forced to make the pass and kind of try to find him and allow Raquel to be the trigger man. So it's nice to see him kind of have that shot generation again.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, you could point to so many reasons why Corey Perry's numbers, individual numbers, are down this season. I would be really interested, I don't know if there's an actual stat on this, but shot assists received, because I feel like being without Ryan Getzlaff or a decent center for basically most of the season, I feel like that has to affect your individual rates. And I feel like the rate alone, I feel like it doesn't capture the quality of the looks or the quality of the passes and the kind of setting up that you're getting from your teammates. So anyway, but it is still a trend that we've seen with Corey Perry the last 4 years that the numbers have been dipping. So anyway, I've been talking about this a lot lately. So one thing I also want to add on this topic, since we're here, you brought up the fact that now he's been with Antoine Vermette and Chris Wagner, and you know, the fact that he doesn't have to be, or he's not kind of competing to be the trigger man on the line. And I mean, CJ Woodling, associate editor for Anaheim Calling, brought up on Twitter, I believe it was today or during the game, about how, you know, getting Perry down there definitely allows him to face weaker competition. And you look at the guys he was up against tonight. I mean, Marco Dano, Kyle Connor, Matt Hendricks, Tyler Myers, Ben Chiarot. I mean, this is not a murderer's row of opposition for Corey Perry. Much lighter, I feel like, than the usual opponents he faces. So, look, I mean, I don't know if this is the long-term solution for Perry in terms of being on the fourth line, but it's definitely something that's working in the short term to just kind of, like, kickstart his game. But I feel like, ultimately, you want to see him in the top six, right?
Yeah, I think definitely. Or, I mean, I've talked about this a few times here, that we shouldn't even classify it with, I think, the lineup as being top six anymore. It's really, like,
right.
it's a top nine. And, I mean, he played a decent... Carlisle, for being Carlisle, rolled four lines tonight. Which was a bit impressive. We've kind of backed out a little bit from...
That's
going into the game, but if we want...
That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's what people expect with us.
Yeah. Yeah, we're just trying to meet expectations here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at a certain point, we're just going to get on the tangent about Miller Lite, right?
Yeah, that does sound pretty good right now. But anyway, you were saying...
Yeah, I don't remember what I was saying.
Okay, so... Well, then I will get into the goals here. So Patrick Laine breaks open the score 1-0. In what was a pretty horrendous play by the Ducks. I think it would classify as horrendous. Kevin Bieksa, who has kind of made a habit of this season, puts Ryan Getzlaff in a terrible spot by rimming it, just a soft rim around the boards, basically into Ryan Getzlaff's feet. And at that point, it's like, all right, whatever happens next, barring catastrophe, you can think this is probably a bit of mostly Bieksa just putting his team in a horrible spot. Ask Cam Fowler all about that. I'm sure he has some things to say.
He probably has nightmares.
Ryan Getzlaff did... It was a catastrophe that ensued. I mean, all he had to do in that situation... So he's being pressured. I believe, was it Blake Wheeler that was on top of him?
I think so.
And all he had to do, right, because he's pinned against the end boards, all he has to do is rim it up the wall. That's all he has to do. And look, I'm not an advocate for just, you know, chipping it off the wall constantly, but in that situation, like, you just got to get it out. And instead, he literally picks the worst option possible. I mean, I guess he could have just held on to it and waited for help to come, backhands it directly into the slot. Patrick Laine is able to get it and basically just, you know, bangs it home. And the Ducks doing themselves no favors on that play. And, you know, honestly, up until the overtime, I would say Ryan Getzlaff was kind of having a weird game, kind of not connecting on the passes he usually does. Couple suspect turnovers, one that we'll get into that resulted in a goal. So I don't know, what'd you see out of him tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because, I mean, we're jumping ahead a bit right now, but it's happening. At a certain point, Carlisle switched up the lines and took Kasha off that line and threw Silverberg there. And it was kind of an interesting change, and it's, I mean, you don't make a change to a line if it's working, and so it was strange. It didn't feel like they really got any good looks. I think that's kind of the best way to put it. I think outside of that one turnover, I don't think they were terrible. I'm just pulling up what their statistics were, and yeah, they weren't bad. They were all above 50% in terms of Corsi 4. Getzlaff was at 52, Raquel at 54, Kasha, who played a little bit of it the game there, and then Silverberg also played there, but Kasha was at 58%. So I don't think they were that bad. It's just they didn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, and Anyway, I'll save some of this for later because they will be a topic of conversation once again. But Adam Henrique ties the game up on a really nice play where, you know, catches the Winnipeg defenseman just kind of looking down and pokes the puck around him in a nice little, I guess, pass to himself, one hand on the stick, and gets – oh, it was Patrick Laine, sorry, not a defenseman. And Patrick Laine, you know, beat by Henrique there to kind of slow him down going to the net because at that point Henrique has a clear lane to the net, gives him a hook and kind of, I guess, disturbs Henrique's balance a little bit.
Yeah.
But Henrique recovers in time and just roofs it far side. And, I mean, just an amazing individual effort. And it's funny because that's something that I brought up. I believe it was in the last podcast. But Henrique can just do that. I mean, he's not going to do that every night, but he can just – He can just make something happen out of nothing, basically, and we've seen it a couple times now with him.
Yeah, and it seems like Henrique's been a Duck for what, maybe a month or two now at this point.
Yeah, I think 2 months. Yeah,
and so I think we've got a decent enough sample size to kind of make a bit of an opinion. I mean, he's solid, completely solid. Has a pretty good, and not trying to get into intangibles or any of that type of stuff.
Uh-oh.
Not doing that. But he has a really good hockey IQ. And he seems like he really understands the game at a really good level and really kind of can see the play develop. And I think that the Ducks are benefiting from that. And I think the other thing that I'll say is he seems like he's streaky, and that's not necessarily a bad thing because all goal scorers are streaky. And I think at least for right now, and who knows if it's going to carry through past the All-Star break, but he was on a good streak right now and really put together a good homestand for himself. And that helped out the Ducks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is, you know, I think in the spot that he is right now, the perfect fit as a third line center.
Yes.
And his line would have a couple more moments tonight. I thought in that first period, just to kind of wrap it up on the first here, I thought JT Brown once again had some nice moments, you know, building off of that game he had on Tuesday where he got his first goal as a Duck. So, look, I'll eat some crow here. I didn't think JT Brown was going to amount to anything with the Ducks. And, you know, for a fourth liner, he's been, I'd say he's been above expectations so far.
Yeah, and he's playing a fair amount at even strength. He put in, or at 5-on-5, he put in, let me see really quickly if I can find him, 13 minutes and 19 seconds, which...
And, yeah, that's pretty good.
At 5-on-5, that's pretty good. And I think at the end of the day, the way we got to look at it is, I know that kind of my opinion on it was, is he better than Jared Bull? And that's how we need to look at it because that's who he's going to be replacing. But, and we weren't, I wasn't so keen on comparing him to Logan Shaw, but
it's hard to avoid that though.
It's hard to avoid that. And I think right now he's comparing very favorable. And I think what makes JT Brown useful to this team as compared to Logan Shaw is I think Logan Shaw was fine, but he was a third or fourth liner, and that's kind of really all he was. It seems like JT Brown has the ability, not saying he's going to put up the points going up and down the line, but he has the ability to kind of mesh wherever and can fit on any line, and I feel like that's a very, very important thing for this team.
Yeah, I really do think that kind of on this topic of JT Brown, I think that, you know, we had talked about it all season long, how Randy Carlyle just didn't seem to trust his fourth line, and you would see it with the time on ice. But it seems like JT Brown was a guy that perhaps they had been targeting for some time, and when they got the opportunity to get him, they did. And now maybe there's just a bit more of that trust in wherever he plays. So it's interesting. And I mean, look, it's kind of the points we were just making about Adam Henrique. I feel like they apply to JT Brown a bit here, where it's like, you know, he's on most nights just a perfectly fine fourth liner, but those moments where he can just do a little more, those count for a lot. And you know, when you have a few of those guys in your lineup that aren't your star players, then you're starting to be onto something in terms of depth.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm trying to remember the term because on the Steve Dangle podcast, their term for those types of players are competent bums.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would hate to use the word bum. But yeah. Like, I mean, it's a guy who can make a play.
Yes.
That's how I like to frame it.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. But we won't spend half this podcast on the Ducks' fourth line. let's get to, okay, and then just to end my last note on the first period was that Corey Perry with another nice chance from a really nice pass by Francois Beauchemin, cutting across the blue line at in the Jets zone, just kind of feathers a backhand pass kind of through all the Jets defense, and then ran on Corey Perry's stick in the slot, and Corey Perry tries to go forehand, backhand, doesn't really get his shot off, but you know, once again, Corey Perry going to the net, making moves, so like that's what you want to see, right?
Yep.
To the second period we go. Bit of a rough start for the Ducks. Oh, I guess I shouldn't say that. The first goal of the period was from the Ducks on another really nice play from that line, or I guess that combination of Adam Henrique, Jakob Silfverberg, and Nick Ritchie, you know, just winning battles down low. Jakob Silfverberg eventually getting the puck to Adam Henrique, who shoots it on net, and Nick Ritchie just kind of being there at the right time, right place, right time.
Mm-hmm.
Puck goes off his body and in, but that combination of, you know, Adam Henrique and Nick Ritchie, and at times it's been either Andre Kasha or Jakob Silfverberg, it's looked pretty good so far, and it's given Randy Carlyle, I think, a new tool to go to during games.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that we're going to jump forward in a bit here, but this was the good of Ritchie, of being in the right place.
Yes.
Puck hits him.
Yes.
And if you're fine with me kind of moving forward, then we get to the bad of Nick Ritchie.
Yes, so let's get right into it. At this point, you know, Ducks feeling good about themselves. You know, you got Henrique, who had his goal. Ritchie, who gets his goal. Ducks are leading. And then, doomsday scenario, Cam Fowler with a pretty routine rim around the boards to, I believe it was intended for Kevin Bieksa, although you can never really be sure. Kevin Bieksa can't really quite corral the puck. It goes into his feet. Puck keeps going up the wall, ends up on Nick Ritchie's stick right along the wall next to the blue line in Anaheim's zone. And, I mean, as a left-handed shot, you know, all he has to do in that situation, like I said with Getzlaff, is just chip it off the wall, chip it off the glass. He's got a forechecker right on top of him. And instead of going to the outside with a chip off the wall, he tries to cut it back towards the middle for God knows why. I don't really know what he was thinking in that scenario, because there was really no one to go to. And, I mean, the Jets just pounce all over it. Jacob Trouba takes the puck on a 2-on-0 with Chris Tanev. Wrong Tanev. Anyway,
nah,
gets the puck gets the puck across. And, I mean, just no chance for John Gibson. And just a really, really boneheaded play by Nick Ritchie there. I mean, like, there's just no other way to put it. Like, I always try to look for a reason why a guy may have done that. But in that situation, especially from a guy like him, who you would think would have no issue in just chipping the puck off the wall, instead tries to make a play when there really was no reason to.
Well, and two things of note I want to kind of bring up here is that I think it was against the Kings maybe or something like that, where we both had made note that Brian Hayward had said the Ducks really don't want their guys coming back into their zone with the puck.
Yes, and this that, type and that of was comment. It right there, yeah.
And the weird thing is that I think that we kind of need to be, because I think we both were of the mind that that's not a bad play to come back into the zone. That
no.
And I think that they're honestly going back into the zone wouldn't have been the bad play if he went back to Bieksa with the puck.
Right, but he wasn't moving his feet. That's the difference there.
Yes, but he wasn't moving his feet, and Ritchie made the bad play of going through the middle.
Yes.
And that's a bit different than going back into his zone, trying to make the pass to his guy. The safe play isn't always the right play, and even then it still would have just turned the puck over there.
Right.
But the safe play is still better than throwing it up the middle straight to their team.
Exactly.
And then the other thing of note is that, I mean, I only caught the replay once or twice of this goal, but it seemed like Bieksa had enough time to get into the play, and he was just really lackadaisical once the puck turns over, and just really has no like care to want to make any effort on that 2-on-0 basically to help out his team at all. And it was so strange to me.
I think what we have to start realizing is that when Kevin Bieksa received the no movement clause, he took that extremely literally.
Oh, that's one of your best jokes I think you've made, Felix.
Oh, thank you. I didn't look at the play very closely either, but I don't know. I mean, I try to avoid being the guy that constantly bashes on Bieksa, but I'm sure he probably had something to do with that play ending up in the back of the net. But like it's like you said, though, going back to, you know, Richie either curling back or not, it's a cost benefit analysis in that situation. Like, you know, the potential downside of turning it over, trying to make that play, as we saw, was pretty immense. But let's move on here to the third period. I mean, I didn't really have any other notes for the second period. It was mainly just a lot of back and forth. A lot of physicality in this game, actually.
Yep, and I think, I mean, at the end of two, the Ducks were holding their own, and I think this was the game on the at the end of the road or end of the homestand that kind of really made me nervous, because we had the Jets, who I believe, let me just double check, but I think they are currently leading the Central Division and have been pretty lethal all year. And for the Ducks to really hold their own and really kind of take it to the Jets in terms of shot attempts, in terms of scoring chances, kind of on all fronts, and really hold their own was really kind of, I think it was just kind of really good to see, and especially to end the homestand.
Did this game affect your opinion of the Jets at all? As a contender?
I mean, I don't really know if I saw them as a full contender to begin with.
That's a hot take.
Yeah, I mean, I think the West is really wide open, and I think that any team can really win it. So I think the Jets, by that nature, are a contender. But I don't know. It's really hard to say, because they didn't look bad, but they didn't look great. But then again, they have the talent in Wheeler and why am I spacing his name? Line A. To really kind of create something out of nothing, and with Line A's shot, you give him...
Wheeler's too.
Yeah, and Line A is a guy where he could look like he's completely all controlled and wrapped up, and he gets an inch of space, gets his shot off, and it's a perfect shot. He's very much similar to Ovechkin in that sense.
Look, I know Patrick Line A is a good hockey player, but can someone please, for the love of God, tell him to shave whatever the hell is going on?
You're not digging the caveman?
Oh, but it's not, like, it's awful. Like, I mean, look, I get it. He's a young guy making millions of dollars. He can do whatever he wants. And it probably is not affecting his luck with the ladies up in Winnipeg. But
you can't tell me
terrible, man.
You can't tell me at 20 or 19, however old he is, you didn't try some weird stuff with your facial hair. We all did it.
This is true. When I was a freshman in college, I thought I was really funny for rocking a mustache. I did a Movember.
Well, we all did that. We've all done that.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah. But my to defend my mustache a little bit, it didn't look as bad as whatever's going on over there.
That's fair. So they also don't have Shifley right now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And he's a huge part of that team.
I mean, it was like when the
two-way game.
It was like trying to judge the Ducks without Getzlaff. And
yeah, that's true.
So that's kind of, I think, the good equalizer there.
Yeah, you know, I actually, this just goes to show how much of a life I have, but last night I was watching, it was like a 24-minute kind of shortened version of the Team North America versus Russia game from the World Cup of Hockey. And Shifley wasn't that team, so he kind of like brought me back a little bit, but man, like, that was so much fun. God. That North America team, can we do that again?
So I have a confession to make.
Oh,
I wasn't able to watch any of that.
Oh, any really? Of you that don't have World ESPN? Cup.
I was in London.
Oh,
I was on a Europe trip, so okay. The time zone didn't line up and all that type of stuff. Right. The only thing I caught was I was actually at a soccer match and coming back on the tube and was going through Twitter and saw that it was that Sweden-North America game.
Yes.
And was
yes.
able to put it on my phone and catch the very end of that game. And that's really all of Team North America.
So you saw the McKinnon goal.
I saw that McKinnon goal.
Yeah. Yeah, Data Dog brings up in the chat here that their uniforms were fire. And I'm really kicking
so
myself
good.
Now that I didn't buy any swag from that team, because just beautiful unis. And I... like, we may look back on that one and be like, damn, that was like, how many Hall of Famers do you think can end up being on that team when it's all said and done?
Well, we'll have Gibson. We'll have Matthews.
Matthews and McDavid are probably going to end up in the Hall of Fame. Probably. McDavid for sure.
Well, the thing is, we probably will never see some of those guys on the same team again. We'll never see Matthews and McDavid on the same team.
Goudreau was on that team.
Yeah.
You know? like Drouin, McKinnon.
Just because those guys will be on Team Canada and Team USA, you'll never see those guys on the same team together again. And so, yeah, I'm in the same boat. I was so close to buying, I think it was a black Team North America McDavid jersey. Just because it was the only McDavid.
Ducks colors.
Oh, and that logo, it was just like,
it was
so, I think it was Wyshynski that said, it was just like, it was Team Anarchy.
It was just like, they were just like it's like they weren't invited to the party, but they were like the coolest kids at the party. Like, that's how I would like describe them. Because, like, you watch that game, and, like, the Russians just had no idea, like, what to do for the first, like, 10 minutes. I mean, they just, like, the amount of speed that North America could throw at you was insane. But anyway, that was easily the longest tangent we've had all season, so I apologize to those who want a Ducks recap. But, by the way, the game that I was watching, the Russian-North America game, was the game where Gibson came in. And because Matt Murray had gotten pulled, who looked absolutely dreadful in that game. And Gibson came in, kept North America in it. I don't think he allowed a goal. But at that point, North America was down and just couldn't come back. So anyway, yeah, that was a fun one. Really hope we get to see that again. Really hope we get to see best on best at some point. I believe the athletes are in Pyongyang now. Or is it Pyeongchang? Did I just say the North Korean capital? Oh, well.
I think it's Pyeongchang.
It's Pyeongchang.
I don't know if the hockey players are there, because
I know the women's team is there.
I don't know if the men's team is there, strictly because I saw Troy Terry post something that he was still at Denver University. So
okay, yeah, I'm gonna watch. I owe it to myself as a hockey fan to watch. I think it's gonna be fun.
Really quickly, sorry, we are going way off on such a tangent right now.
I cursed us when I said that we were going to do a shorter pod. That was like the kiss of death there.
That never happens. I'm opening up because I haven't actually had a chance to look through this yet. But I saw that Team Olympic Athletes of Russia. let me make sure I say it right. Or from Russia. Team OAR.
Yeah, the Oars.
The Oars. They're just going to play OAR songs for when they score goals.
Yeah.
Let's see what players they have. They have Nikita in terms of guys that are on their team that we would know. Nikita Nesterov, Vyacheslav Voinov. I'm assuming that's Slava Voinov, and that's his full name.
I want to see this. Where are you seeing this?
I'm seeing this on CBC Sports. I just threw into the old Google machine. Olympic or Russia Olympic hockey team.
Oh, geez. Yeah, this isn't looking good for everyone else. Vadim Shipashov, Sergei Shirokov, I think he was okay. Ivan Telegin, Kovalchuk, Kirill Kaprasov, who's a real top prospect for the Wild.
Mikhail Grigorenko.
Nikita Gusev. Yeah, I mean, Datsuk, obviously. Mozyakin is very good as well. Marchenko was with Detroit for like a season and then left. Yeah, good-looking team. I mean, Sorokin, I think he's a good goalie. Not sure about that. But, yeah, that's a good-looking team. Easily the best team in the tournament.
Yeah, by far the favorite to win the tournament.
Actually, no. I want to show more respect to Maxime Lapierre. Maybe the second-best team in the tournament.
No, noted Duck, Maxime Lapierre.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
Speaking of Ducks being in the Olympics, also, Timo Pielmeier, who played a game or two with the Ducks, will be Team Germany's goalie. And Jonas Hiller will be Team Switzerland's goalie.
That's pretty cool, though. So, because, I mean, Hiller can still play. He's still playing over there.
Hiller can still play. And for anyone that follows me on Twitter, you saw I randomly decided to start tweeting out Hiller masks the other day. So yeah. That was a fun rabbit hole to go down.
His setups were the best. But okay.
They were straight
fire. We are so far gone from this game. So let's bring it back a little bit here.
Yeah. And it was a good game also.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I mean, hey, it's the Olympics, so I think we're allowed a little international hockey tangent. Okay, but on to the third period here. Ryan Kesler gets just kind of a weird one. I mean, very harmless looking play, gets the puck along the wall on the left side on Connor Hellebuck's left, and Hellebuck just not ready for the shot at all. Kesler spins around from a very severe angle and just roofs it short side. Brian Hayward damn near fainted because he would have been just, you know, criticizing Hellebuck's style all game about how he's too low. or sorry, too deep in his net, and so that one just drove him crazy. But I thought Ryan Kesler had one of his better games since he's returned tonight. I thought that he looked a lot more involved offensively, and I thought that especially in overtime. But look, that goal is kind of punctuating a pretty nice performance by him.
Yeah, and I think he also had a really good game last game. I think he was at 70% Corsi 4. Tonight he was actually below 50% in terms of Corsi 4, but in scoring chance 4 he was at 58%. So he was fine in terms of chances. On that goal, my thought on it is, I don't know how much you can really blame Hellebuyck, or Hellebuyck, however you pronounce it.
I just say Hellebuyck.
Yeah, Hellebuyck.
I don't even try with the Y.
Yeah, but just ignore that Y. The Y is silent. Let's go with it.
Yeah.
It's such a weird shot from a weird angle.
And it was through a crowd, I think.
And like,
there were guys, yeah.
Well, and it's one of those where I think if you let, without anyone there and without a goalie there, you give Kesler the puck in that same spot for him to spin and shoot that same exact way and try to make that same shot in that same general area, you give him 100 chances, I don't think he makes it once. That's just one of those.
If where the goalie knows it's coming, yeah.
Like, that's one of those where we look at and just be like, yep, he got a bounce. He got lucky. That's a bit of a course correction for maybe him having a goalie rob him. That's one of those where kind of if we bring up shooting percentage and things like guys being too low and eventually it's going to course correct itself and they'll get a bounce, that's one of those bounces. That's how those type of things happen.
Yeah, yeah. The assist on that goal goes to regression to the mean. So, But that goal would eventually set the table for a bit of a surge by the Jets trying to send this game to overtime. And look, the Ducks definitely gave the Jets, they kind of just gave them this tying goal, I thought. I mean, Ryan Getzlaf, give him credit, comes back down. The puck, John Gibson makes a save. The puck just sits there in the crease. And, you know, I think Getzlaf makes the right instinctive play, just wipes it out of the crease, but right onto Roslovich's stick, who just buries it into the open net. I mean, it's really hard to look at that play and not think, man, like, Getzlaf, just tough game tonight, you know, decision-making-wise with the puck.
Well, here's a question for you, and I don't know, I didn't see that many replays on it, but what I saw right away is it didn't seem, yes, you want Getzlaf to maybe make a better play, but, I mean, he's just trying to get the puck out of there. I get what he's doing there. Did Silverberg blow a tire there? Because that's supposed to be his man, that winger. He's supposed to be up there and not allow that shot to come through. And so that's kind of where I put a little bit more of the blame there, because the puck's in the crease for Getzlaf. He's just trying to get it the hell out of there.
Yeah. I mean, I think every guy, every hockey player in the world makes the same play as Getzlaf there in that situation.
Yeah. So I put more of the blame on the winger there, honestly.
Yeah. And also, you know, like, I mean, it just looked so unbelievably bad. And that was, like, honestly, like, I think we'll look back on this game and, you know, you look at this, the statistics from tonight's game, and we talked about how the Ducks outchanced and outshot attempted the Jets. And I mean, if it weren't for some of these just awful mistakes or just kind of bizarre moments, I mean, maybe you're talking about a regulation win for the Ducks.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that if you're going to have a shootout win or an overtime win against a team, this is the team in terms of in the Western Conference that you would want that against.
Right. Yeah.
The Ducks aren't going to be fighting the Jets for a playoff spot at this point.
Exactly. Like, this is, they were kind of playing with house money at that point.
And so almost getting a point was kind of a good thing in this game. But on that note, kind of moving forward, the Ducks didn't seem like they were playing for the point. They were pushing play. They were trying to create stuff.
Yeah, it definitely felt like they were hungry for that full 2 points. And I mean, look, you look at tonight's game. Oh my god! Oh, the Rangers, is that still happening? Oh, that's live for some reason.
That is done.
The Sharks lost. And
the Flames lost in a shootout.
The Flames lost in a shootout. Did the Kings lose?
The Kings did not play. They lost. But they won yesterday.
They won their last game. So this was a good night to take 2 points for Anaheim.
And Colorado lost also.
Yeah. So, yeah, good night to pick up both points. But really, to me, like, it, you know, when we're going to look back on this game 2 weeks from now and it's going to be well, you know, what was the most memorable thing of this game? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's going to be the fact that John Gibson left the game and did not look good. I mean, just kind of a bizarre play in the dying minutes of the third period where Blake Wheeler just kind of, you know, getting it on the forecheck, is kind of just passing by Gibson's net, just blows a tire, basically, and goes flying into Gibson's right leg. And what I'm assuming happened, because you can't really see it from, you know, because the leg pad is covering Gibson's legs, so you can't really see what happened, but I'm assuming that his leg probably bent inward or something. And he didn't, I mean, he looked like he was in pain when he was down. And, you know, he tried to fight through it, and I bet you that if he had his way, he would have stayed in the game. But, I mean, they took him right off. And
you got it.
No update on it yet, but Ryan Miller comes in and plays well. But that, look, I mean, the Ducks better hope that John Gibson doesn't miss any time here, because as well as Ryan Miller played tonight, I don't think he's a guy you want to be riding, you know, every single night.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the only saving grace right now is that the All-Star break is this weekend. So he'll at least be able to get some rest, and hopefully it's not too bad. I actually haven't been able to see a replay on that play at all, and I didn't catch it live because it was behind the play. So the only thing that makes me feel a little bit better is, now granted, I hope the knee is not really hurt, but I'm at least happy it's not the groin, because that's something that he's had issues with in the past, and so if it was his groin, I'd be concerned.
Yeah, I think, GC Ducks fan brings up the Mixler here. Looked as though Wheeler went right into his ankle area. Kind of interesting when you think about the fact that, you know, in past seasons, a big knock on Gibson has been his health. And this season, I mean, has had a clean bill of health. And really, tonight, just completely out of his control to come out of that game. So we wish him the best. Hopefully it's nothing serious, although I don't know. He looked like he was in severe discomfort. We'll see. I mean, we can't speculate too much here, because there's just a lot we don't know. And you know, Christian brings up a good point here in the Mixler chat. Gibby was able to put weight on his leg as he was skating off. I think he'll be fine after the break. I think I generally agree with that. I mean, I feel like he was telling the trainer, it looked like they had a conversation. It looked like he was maybe trying to stay in the game, but you know, big picture, you know, with the All-Star break coming up, it's probably a good night to kind of just, I guess, play it safe.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, I'm going through Twitter just do a quick Google search of John Gibson, and popped up into my Twitter feed that CJ Woodling was at the game and knew I was at the game through our conversation and didn't hit me up to say hi. So
that's,
I'm clapping back at him for not doing that. I thought we were friends. Sorry to sidetrack there, but I just saw that and I'm really hurt right now.
That's fine. All right. Well, look, CJ needs to figure it out. That's the big takeaway there. But someone who did figure it out tonight, the Ducks at 3-on-3, looked like a completely different team. And I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk this season about how the Ducks are now a team that practices 3-on-3. And that is actually trying to learn how to play it, which is like, wow, you would think that a professional hockey team would try to know these things, right? But they've been doing it, and tonight, look, they basically had the puck on their sticks for about 4 minutes. I don't think the Jets were able to get a line change for 4 minutes because the Ducks just had them trapped out there. And although the stats will say that the Ducks had a bunch of good looks, or it says here that the Ducks had 4 high danger chances in overtime. I mean, they did get shots from in tight, but I didn't feel like they were creating the best looks. But what they were doing, which I hadn't seen from them before, is they felt very comfortable. If they didn't see something that they would like in the offensive zone, just curling back into the neutral zone and then regrouping and going back in. So a clear adjustment from Randy Carlisle and his staff. And look, it allowed the Ducks to dictate the play in overtime. And, you know, they didn't really concede any odd man rushes the other way either.
Yeah, definitely. And it definitely did seem like they were trying to attack with speed. And there were a couple times that they did stay in the zone and kept it low. But then they, like you said, they weren't afraid to pull it back out of the zone and kind of regroup and attack with speed. It was very kind of almost, I know we've talked about this a bit, but it was very soccer-esque.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like it kind of lends itself to that, where in soccer, you kind of bring it back out. You're trying to find a way to break down the other team, try to find a hole to get through. And that's kind of what 3-on-3 has almost become. And so being able to get that puck and kind of coming out with it, and then sometimes if you attack with speed, you can catch a guy flat-footed or make a pass as a guy kind of jumps into a hole and he can find some space. And so it was good to see it. And I thought, I mean, the Ducks were by far the better team in overtime. I don't know if the Jets even got one shot attempt. I don't think they got a shot on goal with Ryan Miller in net.
No, they didn't. Ryan Miller did not face one shot on goal.
Yeah.
In the short stint that he had in net. Yeah, I mean, like what I noticed about the Ducks, I guess to put a bow in this overtime, is that they, when they sensed pressure in the offensive zone, instead of trying to force a pass and potentially give up a break, they would just curl back and just regroup, which I think is probably the smart thing to do. Because, I mean, you are at risk when you have the puck that much to just, you know, you run out of room and then all of a sudden you got an on-man break going the other way. And I believe it's Datadog bringing up here in the Mixler chat, you know, curl back and dare the other team to change. I mean, that's another thing to consider here, is that the Ducks being at home in the overtime, the Jets had the long change. And so you get stuck in that defensive zone if you're the Jets, and it's a long way to your bench when the Ducks are just on top of you with the puck. So give credit to them.
Yep.
Didn't really get, you know, any sort of one-timers, but, you know, definitely some good looks from in tight.
Yep.
Let's get to the shootout here, because I thought it was a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know the specific number of rounds. Was it like 6? Let's see.
I think
1, 2, 3. Yeah, 5 rounds, something like that. Anyway.
Yep.
So I'm just going to quickly run through the shots here. Corey Perry comes in, kind of does a little change of speed, tries to go 5-hole like he did against Lundqvist on Tuesday. Doesn't work out, gets stopped. Brian Little tries to go 5-hole on Ryan Miller, gets stopped. Little cutback move. Ryan Getzlaff with a really nice play where he comes in from a severe angle, cuts to his backhand, and has a ton of daylight to just roof it, but just isn't able to elevate that puck.
Misses way wide.
Yeah, but it was a nice move, though.
Yes.
Patrick Laine is the next shooter for Winnipeg and comes in with his kind of patented, I don't even really know what to call this because I've never seen anyone do it before him, but instead of tight stick handles, he's just kind of going side to side, just kind of snaking his way in, and then at the last second, kind of just looks for an opening. And, I mean, he basically did that to Ryan Miller, just couldn't tuck it away, hits the post.
Almost Patrick Kane-like.
Yeah, exactly. Ricard Raquel up. Yeah, it's almost like the opposite of Patrick Kane, where Patrick Kane is just furiously stick handling it, basically lulling the goaltender to sleep. Laine is doing the same thing there, but he's just kind of meandering his way to the net. Ricard Raquel with a real nice move as well, although just can't really get enough control in the puck to kind of execute the move that he wants. Blake Wheeler comes in as well, cuts to his forehand, isn't able to score. Andre Kasha tries his patented forehand backhand move, and really just, I mean, same deal with Getzlaff, just has the goalie beat but can't elevate it. So Andre Kasha, we all knew was coming, and he almost scored there. And then Matt Hendricks, man, I can't believe this guy's still well, because he scored in the shootout before. Like, I mean, going back a few seasons now, I think it was when he was in Washington. You know, he comes in and does that like insane donkey kick when he's faking the wrist shot, and then from there just kind of is hoping that the goalie bites. Ryan Miller actually did go down when he faked the wrist shot, but then immediately got back up, which was pretty nice. It's a tough play to make, and then Hendricks basically just runs out of real estate, and Miller makes a stop. And then for whatever reason, Hendricks just kind of hung out in front of Miller for a second there, and then Miller just kind of came out and basically pushed him away a little bit, so I thought that was pretty badass.
I would guess they probably know each other from Team USA.
Oh, is that what that is?
Probably. That's what it looked like to me.
Which Team USA? Was Matt Hendricks on the Olympic team?
No, but probably for like a world championship team would be my guess.
That would have to be it, because otherwise that was just bizarre. You don't really see that in the shootout.
No, but that was the first thing that came into my head, but you might be right.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it is Matty Hendricks, so who knows? Supposedly a great locker room guy.
Yeah.
Adam Henrique, though, with just one of the best shootout goals I think I've seen all season from the Ducks, comes in, left-handed shot, and throws on a slight forehand fake, although I don't think Hellebuck bit on it by any means. And then Henrik just goes back to his forehand. And, you know, I think the fake, all it might have done was just freeze Hellebuyck for a second. And then Henrik goes back to his forehand, creates that angle, and just roofs it perfectly, tags the top of the net. Puck comes, I think, right back out. And, I mean, just a beautiful, beautiful backhand shot. And, you know, it had me wondering, I bet you he learned that from Zach Parise in New Jersey, because that's one of Zach Parise's go-to moves. Interesting.
But that play deserves the Rick Nature Boy flair, or Rick Nature Boy flair. Woo!
Yeah, that was pretty. I mean, that was like, it was just so perfect. So yeah, next shooter up to tie the game, to keep Winnipeg alive, Matthew Perreault comes in, former Duck, in his old barn with a chance to keep the game alive. And just, I guess his move, I would describe it as the no move, because he comes in kind of just a bit lackadaisical, stick handling back and forth, tries to tuck it five hole, like pretty much everyone else did for Winnipeg that night on Miller for whatever reason. Doesn't work. Miller, pumped about the game, you know, throws on a nice celebration. Ducks win, big 2 points, and that's pretty much it for tonight's game as far as the recap goes, but a real nice victory for the Ducks tonight.
Yeah, and I think one thing that we can really touch on briefly, I know that you gotta get going in a bit.
I do, yeah.
But I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Kestrel Scott's question because of him taking me to the game. He was just wondering, how would we rate the homestand? And I think that that's something that I kind of wanted to talk about anyways really quickly.
Yeah, so let me just pull up the schedule here, because I'm forgetting, because this has been a pretty long...
It was a five-gamer, so they played
the
Penguins, the Kings, the Sharks, the Rangers, and then tonight's game against the Jets. And so those, if you look at that, those are five really good teams, and five teams all in a playoff spot, or not playoff spot, but playoff hunt.
So did the Ducks go 4-1 on this homestand?
4-1, and that one loss was that game against the Sharks that...
Yeah.
They really didn't look that bad, and even though the score line suggested they were pretty bad in it, so...
They were just kind of flat in that game. But yeah, to answer Kestrel Scott's question, I would say really strong homestand from the Ducks. I think the biggest takeaway for me, at least, is that I feel like they had to win in a variety of ways in this homestand. I mean, you look at the Penguins game, very up and down. You look at the Kings game last Friday, just a real grinded out playoff hockey style game. They won that one. San Jose come up a little flat, and there's not, I mean, look, it just happens, right? And I thought that the Sharks did a good job of executing the offensive zone.
Yes.
Tuesday,
Gibson had an off night.
Tuesday against the Rangers, I mean, I think the Ducks kind of benefited from some kind of just real bad play from the Rangers.
Yes.
But look, they got it done. And then and then tonight, I mean, another kind of just real gutsy win. And so I think we learned a lot about this team's character on this homestand. And look, it's been a whirlwind, because you rewind to the very beginning of this homestand with the Cogliano suspension to now with the Ducks still in the hunt. I think you gotta give it a thumbs up.
Well, and I think coming into it, and granted they lost one of the divisional games in it, but they had two huge divisional games and then another one within the conference. And at the end of the day, they went 4-1, picked up a lot of points on some teams, and that's exactly what you needed. And kind of just as a bit of a segue, but they picked up 8 out of 10 points on this homestand, which is something they really needed. But just a brief little standings update, at least just kind of looking at the Pacific really quickly. You've got Vegas in first place with 48 games played and 68 points. San Jose at 48 games played and 59 points. Calgary at 49 games played and 58 points. And then you've got LA at 49 games played, 57 points. And then the Ducks at 50 games played, 57 points. And then when you factor in the wild card, Colorado's the second wild card team, also at 57 points. So right now, they're actually, the Wild are also at 57 points. So there are four teams in the West all at 57 points. And then the Flames are at 58 points, and the Sharks are at 59 points. So it's really bunched up right now.
It's really tight. And I mean, there's, every game is going to be a playoff game.
Yep.
You know, the next 32 games are going to be of extreme importance. And, you know, you got the All-Star game this weekend, but after that, it is just, I mean, full speed ahead for this season.
And I think you need to win more. You need to win your home games. And winning 4 out of 5 home games is exactly what you need. And now you can go on the road. And the Ducks are about to go on a pretty good road trip coming up here. And I think that they need to win more than they lose. But because they played so well in this homestand, you don't need to win every game.
God. That just made me realize this upcoming Eastern road trip, Atlantic Division Tour, I'm going to actually have to watch the Canadians play. That's going to be rough.
Yeah. So,
God,
I wanted to briefly look at the schedule. And so here's the games that are up on that road trip. We've got Boston, and then you've got Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, Buffalo.
Yeah. Basically the Atlantic Division minus the Florida teams. So, it could be a pretty good road trip for the Ducks. I mean, if you look at it, you know, coldly here, there's not a lot of good teams on that list. I mean, the Bruins to me are the only good team. I mean, at least right now. I mean, to me, the Bruins are a contender.
I think I heard they've gotten at least a point in each of their last 17 games.
Exactly. And then, but you know, outside of that, you know, after that game on Tuesday against the Bruins, I mean, the Senators, whose season has gone completely off the rails, the Canadians, you could say the same thing. Although the Canadians, for as bad as they've been, you know, they're still a tough matchup, you know, if you're a Western team coming in. Just, you know, Carey Price can win you a game any night, and Max Pacioretty's been very hot. But then Maple Leafs, a team that's also been struggling, and then you end the road trip on a back-to-back with the Sabres. So yes, you're looking at it at a road trip where the Ducks could potentially win the majority of their games. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. And like we were saying, they just came off this homestand where every team was great. And now they need to make sure that they get up for these games and keep playing, because I think we can look at this homestand and they played well in almost every single game. And I think that's what you need from this team.
Yeah. Datadog adds in the Mixler chat, Patchy can scout his future team. Nice. I would like to correct, it's Patches. But hey, look.
We can make a new nickname for him here.
You're going to rename him? Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I can't be any more depressed about this Canadian season, so I guess fire away.
Well, I mean, Galchenyuk can also take a look at what he's going to be able to deal with in a little bit.
Yeah, Mike Coppinger had to bring that up on the last pod.
I know, so I heard that.
Everyone, like as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, God. But it's okay.
I was going to make the comment to you, but I refrained from it. But now that we're on the topic, I was just going to say Mike Coppinger was really going through and making sure to live up to the shoes that I've left to really make sure to bring that up.
He had to make sure the quota was met per podcast. That's fine. All right. We got anything else, or are we ready to wrap up here?
I think I'm all good. All right. The only thing that I'll just kind of add briefly, and I've sent this out on Twitter, is as of right now, I think I've got what I'm going to rank this week all set, but if you ever come up with something that you want me to rank in a future rankings, I've started making a list, so feel free to just...
Did you see Satch's comment in the Mixler?
He said
goalie masks.
I did, and that will probably be added to my list. The one I like the most...
I need to have some input on that one as a former goalie.
Okay. The one I like the most that I don't know if I'm going to do this week, but I'll do it
eventually. Is this recent goalie masks, or are we including, like...
Hey, it's my list. I get to make the rules.
Oh, yeah. I said we. My bad.
God.
I have to make a rivaling ranking.
I mean, I can let you help. But the one I really like that I'm going to use in the near future, but not this week, is... Anaheim calling staff members.
Oh my God. What is this? I'm not okay with this, but whatever. I better be number one. Like, that's all I'm saying.
Wait, you want to be the one star?
Or no. Whatever the highest possible ranking is.
Okay. But yeah. So send me your rankings for whatever you want me to go ahead and rank. I'll add it to my list. Oh, Shatch1 also brought up that he said John Morrison first. He did, but we piggybacked on that and started talking about it, so I will give you credit.
Yeah, there. Just know that by entering the Mixler chat and leaving potential ideas, you are giving up all intellectual property rights.
I am taking credit for everything.
But my favorite mask of all time, man. Ooh. I mean, you know, I hate to say this, Oh man, this is tough. There's a lot of good ones, but one of my favorites when I was a kid was definitely Marty Brodeur. That one's way up there for me.
I mean, for me, it's hard because you obviously have nostalgia. I think the Guy Hebert wing mask is always going to be up there for me. It's a good one,
yeah.
A lot of Jonas Hiller's masks are really high up there.
Evgeny Nabokov had some really good masks.
Jonas Hiller just had the best masks. Stop.
His were kind of funky, though. Yeah. Like, the problem with them was that they didn't have the Bauer cut, the ITEC cut. That was the problem.
So that doesn't change.
But I appreciated the creativity of the masks, though.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't all hits, but most of them were.
You know who had really good masks that like will probably be forgotten, or no, that is definitely already forgotten? Rick DiPietro. If you go back and look, had some pretty solid masks. So anyway, I could literally go on about this all night. I have before with friends. So yeah. That'll do it for today's show. Thank you to everyone who joined in the Mixlr chat tonight. Definitely a bit of a lively chat tonight, which honestly I didn't expect from tonight's game. I was a little worried at one point, like, what are we going to talk about? But as usual, the listeners come through.
We always have our tangents. I mean, we did talk about Team Russia.
And plus, we haven't done a pod together since Sunday. So we were this was almost like bound to happen.
And on that, do you want to go ahead and tease it?
What am I teasing? Oh, yes, we might do a podcast this weekend for the All-Star weekend. We are still determining what day it'll be.
Yep.
But we kind of want to. Oh, okay. Now I know what you're talking about. So, by the way, shout out to Reddit. But we've been posting, Jake has been posting the podcast on Reddit, and someone left a comment saying you guys should do like an analytics deep dive on the Ducks, just purely analytics. So I probably just lost like 70% of the audience right now, but it's fine. So for this weekend, what we're thinking of doing is just kind of an analytics report card for the Ducks this season, kind of just going through and taking a real close look at the numbers. So no promises, but there's a good chance we're going to do that this weekend.
Yeah.
If not this weekend, then at some point for sure. Well,
and I think that we might try to do it on Mixlr also. So
definitely.
So when we decide it, I'll try to send out a tweet maybe an hour or two before.
We will notify the masses.
At some point over the weekend, keep an eye out. I'll probably tweet out what time it's going to be at. So if you do want to jump in and listen live, keep an eye on that. Maybe we can do it where if it's going on during the All-Star game, we can have that in background and make random comments about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, hey, look at another guy who didn't back check. Oh, look, another guy who didn't back check. Yeah.
Hey, that goalie didn't try.
Yeah. Oh, look, another crappy skills competition new idea. All right. Anyway, you can tell how much I love the All-Star game. But with all that said, that'll do it for today's show. Thank you to everyone who joined the chat. As always, make sure to check us out on iTunes, leave a rating and a review.
Yes,
helps
please.
The show get noticed. And then soundcloud.com/acpod if you're not on iTunes. And then, as always, anaheimcalling.com, @AnaheimCalling on Twitter for all your Ducks content needs. Jake is on Twitter tweeting out the aforementioned rankings weekly. Highly recommend those. They're a lot of fun. @ReindeerGaves91. I'm on Twitter @Felix_Sicard tweeting out Ducks content constantly. So that'll do it for today's show. We will catch you guys this weekend and next Tuesday against Boston. So we will talk to you then. Take it easy.
Bye.